Ziegler and Bayer book indicates that lobbyists are thought to be, and professionally organized lobbyists are thought to be, probably the single most important influence in legislative decisions.
Putin has a case of a female legislator whose husband is on a school board or an attorney for a school board or something. He buys her dinner every night, and at the same time, across the dinner table, he attempts to influence her decisions in certain matters, although she may be stubborn. Would this be that board bill? Would that be part of the...
Well, she just wants to go out to dinner every night.
I'm going to pass the buck to the conflict of interest bill because I think that's a generic area where that question belongs.
Dave, your testimony has been very enlightening. I'm going to cut you off right now because we have a number of them, and we don't intend on being here until 11 o'clock tonight if we can.
I appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, if I could thank Dave, you worked very hard on this, and although I have large disagreements in some areas, you worked very hard, along with others, to put this in shape. Good job, and I hope now that the finals are over, or about to be over,
we'll be called.
I'd be more than happy, and that goes to entire organization.
We'll
Thank
be
you
called.
Very much.
Fine. All right, Don Wagner from the Oregon Environmental Council. Here's the one we've belabored a little bit. Beat over the head a couple of times.
My name is Don Wagner. I'm speaking as president of the Oregon Environmental Council. I didn't know that we had so much power. I'm not sure we do. I would like to speak in favor of the bill. However, we do have some questions, and we are really speaking in favor of the concept. I think that the concept in general, as is outlined under Section 2 for administrative action, compensation, executive official, legislative action, legislative official, all your definitions, I think are very good. And I think it's important that it goes beyond merely the actual state legislature. When we start to define lobbyist to mean any person whether or not compensated or reimbursed for expenses, I think that this might just raise a problem. Now, we appreciate that as an organization, the Oregon Environmental Council must come under these provisions, and we welcome it. We know that it will be a significant problem to us to maintain the kinds of records that are necessary, but nevertheless, we think that on balance, it is very important. But to have each person who is involved in any way, writing the governor, writing somebody who happens to be within our organization, who happens to be a member, have to all of a sudden send some kind of a document to say that now he's a lobbyist and he's working on this particular activity, might be rather burdensome. So if the organization as a whole does spend some cut-off amount, I don't know what this might be, $25, $50, then I think that we ought to have to report it. But to have individuals have to report it, this is, I think, could be kind of a problem area.
Right here I wanted to ask you that, once again, I got to come back, or have to come back to the purpose of this. Are we, just after getting the 50 people that live here, that are lobbyists, that we want them to report money, are we interested in who is lobbying and who is having the effect on legislation? And
I think you want the latter, but I'd like to try to explain my answer. When we, for example, put out mailings, which we do, they may be relatively large mailings. They may be 200 pieces, they may be 3,000 pieces, which are specifically attempting to encourage people to come and testify. And in order to do so, you must, of course, put out some facts, otherwise people won't show. The people who do show are not necessarily members. They are people who have been persuaded by the facts that we have tried to put out that this is an important matter to them. And for each person as they walk in the door, to have to say, I'm in favor of this, and I happen to be a member of thus and so, I happen to not be a member of thus and so, and therefore my expenses, traveling expenses to the hearing or meeting, therefore must be tallied or not. I think this is rather burdensome. I don't think it's really what you want. I think what is important is if we spend, let's say, $300 for postage, various office expenses and what have you, in support of a particular bill. I think you would want to know that. I think if certain of our employees are spending their time in support of the bill, either in the office or in coordination activities at the legislature, I think you want to know that. I think if you try to go beyond that, that you're stepping into what is truly the citizen lobbying area. We realize that we do attempt to encourage people to come here, but we do not pay people to come here or go to other areas where this bill would be effective. And if we did, then we should report it. But if by information being passed about, people are motivated to come testify.
Do you feel that there's much difference if 100 optometrists give $50 to one individual to lobby for them than if 100 people came at your request from around the state and each spent $50? You don't think that that's the same amount of money expended and that ought to be reported?
Well, this our request, I think, is a difficult term. I mean, we say...
Well, if we have... let's take some environmental bill and that 100 people come from all over the state all of a sudden.
Yeah.
They didn't find out about that accidentally. Let's take the steelhead bill, for instance. The steelheaders have a very rapid way of communicating and in intensive numbers. And immediately I know when a bill's going to come up because I get 25 to 50 telegrams on it. I'll get several telephone calls, and I'll probably have just as many people up here. But cumulative amount amounts to a lot of money. Now, if we say, we'll just say you have these 100 people come down, each one worth $50, that's whatever that would be,
$5,000.
It wouldn't be much different to me than if they went out and collected the $50 and had from 100 optometrists and had the one man here expending that kind of money, because it's in total, it's the same amount, and they all come down to influence it. Now, certainly, if you're going to look at the comparison about the amount of money that's spent to get a bill into effect, there was $5,000 spent either way, but one wouldn't show up and the other would. And that's what I still get back to the purpose of this bill, is to discover how much money is spent to influence legislation. At least that's what I think that this bill is about.
The one way of totaling this, to say that if the steelheaders or the OEC or the PR Club or the AFL-CIO,
whoever... Yeah, we have nothing against any of these. We're just picking any.
But let's say if they spend money putting out mailings, have their staff spend time calling people and this kind of thing, I think this has got to be tabulated. And as I understand it, we would be required to do so, and other groups would be required to do so. The problem of defining exactly why a person shows up in any particular public meeting, he might even read the papers. So it's
committee agrees on that.
So I mean, it's just a very difficult area, and our out-of-pocket expenses, I think, are appropriately.
All right, then that comes back to one of the points that he brought up here a minute ago, Representative Ingalls. So we have the optometrist man that's down here, and he has $5,000, and he lives here, and it takes $1,000 a month to live here, and he's here for 2 months maybe for his bills. He actually spent out of his $5,000 maybe $1,000 on entertainment, and then even this might be questionable whether it was his or the legislator that he was taking out. But now, what part do you report?
Well, as the bill is written. He lives someplace else?
Well, he comes down here to live.
comes down here to live during the...
But we'll say that $4,000 out of his $5,000 is taken to live.
Well, we're getting beyond my technical competence, but as I see it here, if he has to move to Salem, he's maintaining two separate houses, presumably. This would be part of the compensation that would have to be reported. Now, I believe that you're taking me beyond what...
Well, I really want to know. I'm not being facetious about it. I would like to know
and
what kind of...
what I'm telling you, excuse me, is that the OEC is in favor of full disclosure, even though it's going to be a burden on us. I believe that the way that it should be interpreted, or the way the bill should be drafted, is that if a person moves to Salem, well, no matter whether he moves here or not, if he's being paid for certain...
Don, yes. the only reason I know it's Monday is because I see those two young ladies there in the hall, the two young ladies in the front row.
Yes.
That's the only thing that I know it's Monday.
Yes.
When they started out, they probably hadn't spent anything, but by now they've spent at least $50 a piece traveling back and forth from Milwaukee or wherever.
I'd be happy to register. I'm close. I'd be happy to register.
Well, let me...
This is what it comes down to again. How much money do they charge off for time? All of this sort of thing. What is the amount of money that you spend?
Well, okay, I see the problem. But if you try to make each individual, well, for myself, okay, I spend a fair amount of time lobbying in a lot of different things. But it's coming out of my own pocket. Okay.
Well, so is the optometrist money.
Yeah, it's coming out of his own pocket, too. All right. And if the lobbyist... Maybe I didn't answer your question, but if a lobbyist is hired, I think he should have to say where he got his money and how he spent it. Okay. If it would seem to me that it would be more effective for each of the optometrists to come down to Salem anyway and lobby their legislators. And maybe if they're troubled about having to report it, maybe then that's their best bet.
Well, it's not always so easy if you live near Portland. You know, that's only an hour's drive or less than an hour, but if you live down in Klamath Falls, that's the whole day. You'd have to take off a minimum of 3 days' work to come down here and lobby one day.
Okay.
And you see, that'd be a whole different thing. It's just impossible for him to do it.
Okay. I would like to make just a brief statement of why we support the bill.
All right. Well, we're trying.
We're not going to let you.
We're not being antagonists. We're trying to pick out so that we can find that we can get a bill that does the things that we want it to do and answers the kind of questions we want it to answer.
All right, and I appreciate that. And if I'm trying, if I'm not, some of the answers I'm giving, I'm not an attorney. I'm trying to say what I think the bill should do. If you're asking me what the bill does do, then I'm going to have to defer. And I think that was a couple of the questions that you asked me, whether or not a particular person would, in fact, have to report. I think he should have to, whether or not he does, when the bill is the same.
Okay. Are there further questions? If not, thank you very much, Don.
Okay.
You said a person, is that you? I won't say is it used in the context of the bill, but an organization, as you see it, is also a person.
Well, sir.
It says so in the bill.
Yes, sir. I believe
your group should register, and any expenditures by individual members of your group should be included in the total amount that you have spent to influence legislation.
Any expenditures which are made by our group, I would say that the fact that they become that they have paid their dues.
No, I don't buy that.
You mean
well,
by
you're
what,
asking me
what
to specify this is the way it ought to be.
Well, yeah, all right.
The fact that they may or may not be members of the Oregon Environmental Council, okay, shouldn't put them in a separate classification, whereby having paid their $10 membership, they must now report all their activities.
Okay, let me put it this way. Your common treasury spends $75 out of their dues for lobbying purposes. Now, the individual members may also spend collectively another $150.
Yes.
So in effect you spent $220 to lobby on or against a certain bill.
Well, you're back to the problem of saying, when a person comes and does lobbying activity of any kind, why he is there, what motivates him to make the trip. I mean,
but he comes, and when he sits down, he says, I'm a member of the Oregon Environmental Council.
If he's lobbying for the Oregon Environmental Council, he says, I'm speaking for the Oregon Environmental Council.
Okay,
that's one thing, perhaps.
All right, now the...
But most of them do not. Most of them, you're probably talking about the bottle bill and other things the last session, and the land use bill perhaps this session. These people are coming and speaking out of their own convictions. They may or may not have be members of the OEC. They may or may not have come as a result of the information we sent out.
If we're truly trying to find out how much is spent to influence legislation, should that not be included in the report? The National Rifle Association and the gun lobbyists, for instance.
I think that you can have effective legislation, and I think that it is important that this legislation be passed without delving into people's personal motivations to the extent that you seem to wish to. And I think that if we, each of the organizations, document their expenditures out of their public treasury, which, by the way, is not small, perhaps not large in our case, but it's not small. I think that you, at that point, have achieved the goal, which is we would like to know who's lobbying against our bill, and I think perhaps other people, or perhaps not our bills that we are supporting, and I think others would like to know who are lobbying for and against their bills. I think and I think each of you would like to know who are in fact out there trying to make things happen. I think if you hit the organizations, by and large, you're going to achieve your goal. Otherwise, I think you're going to make it very difficult and you're really going to get away from citizen lobbying, because everybody's going to be challenged and they're going to say, aha, you're really here because. And I don't believe this is what you're really looking for, hoping.
What if they come in, the National Right to Life Association comes in or something with a big sign on them? And we see 200 of them at once, and it costs a minimum of $5 for each one of them to get here. I don't care if they just come from Satan.
Yes. Well, if the National Right to Life provided those buttons, I think they ought to have to say so, and they ought to have to say what it costs.
Well, the buttons or their expenses, that's what we're talking about.
I hope that I've tried to make it clear that unless the money was funneled through the OEC or the Right to Life or whatever group it is, and they provided services like chartering a bus or providing the buttons or something like this, then you shouldn't have to report it. That's our position.
Thank you very much, Don, for other questions. Ms. Joyce Cohen.
One thing about how do you then count the lobby, if you say, the unconscious page?
My name is Joyce Cohen, and I'm here on behalf of Tri County Politics and the Land Use Task Force Chairman. New Politics is an organization, nonpartisan, and we represent about 300 to 400 people in the Multnomah, Clackamas, Washington County area. And we're interested in promoting citizen participation in government. It seems that wherever I go and whatever meetings, we're talking about citizen participation, and it seems to be of a concern to public officials in various places. And I think that the citizens should be encouraged to be involved on the local level and at all levels of government. And in order to open up this governmental process, we feel it's important to have this bill so that we as the public will know what's happening down here. And if nothing else, even if we don't come down here and spend our $5 or $10, we might be able to find out by staying at home and reading newspaper, or at least finding out how money is spent and how the influence are going and on whom. We think it's important to have this to offset some of this public distrust or the disillusion that comes with, well, it doesn't make any difference what I do or whom I elect, because the power will win anyway. And I think this is what the citizen is fighting, and this is what we're dealing with when it comes down to the apathy of the voters. I think the enactment of HB 2530 would do much to straighten out some of these rumors and lessen some of the loss of confidence to feel that our legislators really are not are acting in the behalf of the citizens and the voters who put them here. My personal reason for being here, or my personal experience at Mountain Line, has been that Tri-County has taken an active interest in support of land use planning throughout, and we believe that we need it at the local level, and we believe that we need to have some land use planning at state level. And this is how I came to be involved. We came down to hearings on Senate 100, and we were gratified. I was personally gratified to see how the committee was running the operation. They listened, and they were very careful in terms of paying attention to written testimony and verbal testimony from all sorts of people, and they really, I felt, are very encouraged. They're really doing good things. And they were trying to make improvements and compromises as necessary in something that's complicated. Then it was difficult to understand, and it was difficult to explain to the people in my group who didn't come down here what happened and why Senate Bill 100, the land use planning bill, was turned over to a group of four lobbyists for a rewrite. And I couldn't answer them. I had no information by which to even attempt to answer the people that I was dealing with, the people that at home who wanted to know. And what happened? There was no information, public information, anywhere to find out who's doing this.
Did you ask,
when
you know anyone to ask for a report lobbyist?
No.
Did you go to
the interview? Yes, I did. I did go. And I will continue on here to say that I certainly don't. I think the PCMP is still supporting the 100, and we are actively involved in the support of it. And I think the people, the lobbyists who worked on that, worked very hard, and then as an individual, you know, I'm not calling either the censors or the lobbyists. It certainly wasn't, you know, they did beyond what they call duty was.
If I might interrupt, I'm also on that committee, and I heard Senate Bill 100, and I think you attended a lot of meetings.
I did, yeah.
And you realize that we probably had more extensive hearings on that bill than any bill that I have ever seen in this legislature.
That's right.
In all my history, and which is not that long, but this is the fourth session, so we did hear. And we heard clear up to our ears, and the same thing over and over and over. And we were downstairs, and we had in room 20. And now, when that was all done, that wasn't exactly given to four lobbyists. A couple of those people were experts in writing bills, much the same as someone wrote this bill before we got it.
Yes,
and they heard all the arguments, and the author, Hector McPherson, of the other one, was also in on all the drafting of that bill, and so was Ted Halleck, the chairman, who knew every move that they were making. You had L.B. Day, who was a pretty expert ex-legislator and a pretty expert bill writer.
who wrote most of that, with hearing all of the evidence and everything, and he tried to incorporate everything. When Senate Bill 100 came out, as you remember, there were so many people from both sides with varied points of view, from far left to far right, and far right to far left, whichever way you want to go, on both sides. And they tried to incorporate something that everybody could live with, because that's what we are here for. It's the art of compromise, but we make the least amount of people happy so that everyone can live with the legislation that we put out. And those people were drawing up something, and then when that bill came out, again, after it was rewritten, we went through the whole process again, with once more going down to room 20, and once more having 500 people down there, and all over again on the new bill. I can't see where those were, what was so...
Well, the thing that was difficult to understand was, I can understand if you have 16 votes in the Senate who are opposing the bill, and you have to go around and find out what their problem is. You know, if you're going to try to get a land use bill through, then you've got to...
Those weren't 16 votes. Those are 2 million people out there, and we're trying to keep all those
That's
people
right.
happy.
As a lobbyist representing AOI, Warehouses, Farm Bureau, and the counties were the ones that were instrumental in the bill. It was on the meeting when they were chosen as the ad hoc committee. Subsequently, LB Day, I'm not arguing with you, LB Day was put in there to represent Senator McPherson's interest. But the question is, how did this all come about, and why do we have to rely on experts of this? I don't understand.
Well, did you hear us here a little while ago talking to Dave a minute ago, Frommeyer, who is an attorney from the University of Oregon Law School, and we said to him, when we get ready to work this bill over, we would like to have you here to help us redraft it. Now, should we? He's a citizen lobbyist. Definitely a lobbyist for the common cause.
Right.
Should we then not have...
We're not questioning the fact that...
Because we could go to our man here, and we've got 1, 2, 3 lawyers.
Four.
And we could actually go sit down and do it, or we could take down the Legislative Council and have it all done over.
Mr. Chairman,
but might it come with that same input?
May I suggest it's a somewhat non sequitur to the bill we're considering?
I don't think it's sequitur.
No.
No, I really want to pass on. The point is that I wanted to make is that citizens are concerned. Citizens are confused when they see this in the papers. Citizens want to know what's happening. They don't understand what's happening. They don't understand the need. And this is what I'm trying to address myself to. And there is some sort of need for legislation to clarify these kind of things. Now, I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. I'm not saying I think they were very instrumental and they did the job. But you got to know why. I mean, and you should know who they represent. And I think this would be an assistance to people to understand the legislative process. And that's why I would be in support, and my organization would be in support. And we would see nothing wrong with us disclosing any amount of money we make in phoning or anything of this order.
Are there questions in this court?
You've heard the questions we've addressed to other members relative to amateur lobbyists and their expenses via the professional lobbyists and their expenses. Do you have any comment on that?
No, I think what you lose in this kind of thing, if tri-county politics would go out and have fundraisers rather than try to send out information so that they can get the response of people who get their newsletter or things of this sort, what would happen if tri-county would have a fundraiser and pay me to come up here to lobby, and I've never lobbied Senator Ripper, I've only testified, because I don't have time. But if they would pay me to be a lobbyist, those citizens would lose their chance at finding what the real information might be. You're not doing any education of the citizens if you rely entirely on paying me as Joyce Cohen.
Is not testifying before a committee a form of lobbying?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm saying, I consider myself as a lobbyist. I've never lobbied in the sense that we're talking about, in terms of taking out the money or contacting.
He doesn't have a buttonhole. I don't think you can button. Yes, he does. Yeah. You can buttonhole.
this would be my point, what you would lose if you began to limit this sort of thing and force sort of ad hoc organizations of this sort to go. No, I would think that this might be in order, and people who have would.
I'm thinking that it's
been
long since I had more than 22 minutes for lunch. You have lunch with me. Most lobbying.
Well, that's the odd part. Most stuff is done in your office. At least it is with me. And you're on Ways and Means. You know, the dinner engagements just go out the window because you never have any time. But it doesn't mean that you're not lobbied. And most of it's done by people. There's my wife keeps track of those hours that I'm open. When I get up there, there's 10 people waiting, trying to squeeze in that little bit of time. I'm sure that's true about the end. Joyce, I asked a question before to some of the others. I wonder how your group feels about groups that are supported by tax money. Many of them already have a paid lobbyist, but their staff provides much background. I'm thinking of the city of Portland, for instance, or the Port of Portland. Don't you think that those areas that are covered by tax dollars should specifically be pointed out in this bill, especially?
Well, I can speak from a personal standpoint, and when I found out that our county dues were were involved, you know, in a lot of the, in a genuine, honest, paid legislative effort, you know, I can understand the thesis, but I would have just, I didn't know. And just the fact of knowing made me understand it a little better, who and where and how. I think this is worth it.
Well, now, today, the whole city, almost the whole city council of Portland was down here. Do you think that ought to be recorded?
I think the taxpayers
I
have the right
is.
To know.
I think they find out why.
Are there further questions, Joyce? Thank you very much, Joyce. Rich Chambers.
My name is Rich Chambers, resident of Salem. My address is Lombardy Lane. I am a supporting member of Common Cause. I have never attended one of their meetings. I am a member of the Oregon Environmental Council and have been since it was founded. I was on their board of directors approximately 1 month. After listening to all the testimony here, I would like to hearken back to just about 2 years ago when on the floor of the Senate, a number of bottles and cans came out, and there was a tremendous big long hassle as to whether these were carbonated beverages or not carbonated beverages, or exactly what should the definition should be for the bill that was so hard fought. And I would like to make the point to you gentlemen that there should be, and I think in this bill as finally drawn, a clear distinction between people that lobby for a living and people that lobby because they have a particular feeling about something having to do with the state of Oregon. I do not believe that separating a man that comes from Roseburg, whose expenses will be about $50, from a man who comes from Salem, whose expenses might be $11.35, is anything that this bill should speak to at all. I think the clear distinction should be between those people that are paid to come to this legislature specifically and promote a given measure, and those people that come because of their own feeling or because they are moved by an organization to come here and come at their own expense. Now, I started on the bottle bill in August of 1968. I attended 29 straight public hearings. I've been inside this Capitol building a great number of times. I have lobbied, and if this bill is written, was passed by this legislature, I would gladly register as a lobbyist. I talked to the legislators personally and worked on the thing all this time. However, I don't feel that the exact amount of money that I spent is of great interest to the constituency. It might be to my wife, and I hope she never finds out how much it was. But I would point out to you that as the bill, we've been talking about this $50 thing quite a bit, but I'd like to point out that on page 6, line 7, it says any individual who is otherwise not a lobbyist and who, acting solely on his own behalf, does not spend an amount in excess of $50 for personal postage and telephone. Now, maybe you don't like that definition, but that does preclude lunches, gasoline, and time going back and forth. The time is late, and I'd like to close my testimony by saying that my feeling for the bottle bill was very strong before the Oregon Environmental Council actually came on the scene as a lobbying organization. However, I felt that my best hope was working through the Oregon Environmental Council, so I attended during the 1971 session every one of their board meetings. Not as a board member. It's a very loose organization, and all are welcome to come and attend the board meeting. They were all held here in Salem, and I remember that there were three straight meetings during which it was deliberated whether to give Maridel Gale $2 a day for every day she came up here. She was driving a luxury diesel automobile, a Mercedes-Benz, and there was a lot of deliberation as to whether she should get that $2 a day to come up here and be a professional lobbyist. That was the total extent of what she got for coming up here to lobby from the Oregon Environmental Council. Now, I maintain it is semantic to say exactly how much she spent. The balance of that, over and above that $2, and it was considerable, was her money and her husband's money. And I feel strongly that there is a clear definition between people that spend their own money to come and talk to you people and people that are paid to come and talk to you people. I have never been paid since once by anyone to lobby this legislature. The minute I am, I would feel that I should come under all the provisions as they govern the rest of the lobbyists. However, if you feel that a lobbyist, as defined in here, is anyone that talks to a legislature personally as opposed to merely testifying at a hearing, fine, I will come and lobby. I'm in it so deep now that another few dollars doesn't matter. Thank you, gentlemen. I'm prepared to answer any questions. I'm probably the only man here that spent this much time on one thing and has never spent anyone else's money.
Oh, Rich, if you're interested then in money, would it be just as easy for us, rather than to go through all of this trying to define this, and just say that we want a C&E or contribution and expense account from each lobbyist as to what he spends at the end of the session? The same as we do a legislator when he's running for office.
I would say monthly would be better.
That's all you really need. That you don't need the bill. Really, this is what you really need.
That is what I think the bill should bring forth. Yes.
Other questions, Rich? What should the thrust of the bill be? To learn who's spending what and for what purpose, or who is influencing legislation?
The former, in my opinion. I don't believe that the real thrust of this measure should be who is influencing legislation. All kinds of things are influencing legislation. Television, newspapers, as has been pointed out here, is influencing legislation. The people that are influencing legislation should be divided into two classes. Those people that feel strongly enough about a measure or about a whole group of measures to spend their own money, and those people who pay someone else to represent them. That is, I hate to appear too black and white, but that is the exact definition I feel for this measure.
Further questions?
I would say, Representative Ingalls, in answer to your question, that I agree with the testimony I've heard here earlier that this entire measure can bog down into the difference between $49.50 and $51.75 if you don't. And that is not going to influence that much legislation, I don't believe. We're talking about thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars, and hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I think that amateurs and professionals should be clearly defined and then the thing set up on that basis.
Well, since there's no gun lobby this session that I know of, should what the individual members of the American Rifle Association spend be brought into one account and shown that they influenced the legislation or not?
If they have paid anyone to come here and represent.
No, if they've come as individuals.
If they have come as individuals, I think this is the truest meaning of democracy. If they are willing to spend their own time and money and feel strongly enough about this thing. If they have paid someone else to come in their behalf, then the amounts might mount up, and it's important. That is, I hate to appear black and white, but that's the way I look at it, and that's the way I think you can get some meaning out of this bill, instead of 1,000 reams of tablet paper with $50.35 listed on it.
Yeah, but the combined amount the American Rifle Association members spend may be considerably more than the chiropractor spend. And you would have the chiropractors register and not the...
I'm aware of that, and it's a democratic thing when that many people are prepared to spend that kind of money.
Why wouldn't it be a democratic thing for the chiropractor to be represented, whether he came up here or just represented?
The Right to Life people may spend far more than that chiropractor, and you're going to have the chiropractor register, but not the Right to Life people.
The bill as presently drafted wouldn't
you stay
have
out of this. You're not a, you had your guess.
Well, the bill as presently drafted would make all these Right to Life people register if they talk directly to a representative. I don't feel that that's necessary, but this is the way the bill is drawn, as I understand it.
You don't think masses of people in the hearing room influence legislation?
Point is,
it could be a very negative.
Okay. Earl, do you have a question?
Well, it just seems to me, the thing that he's drawing is that gun lobby, actually, those citizens did run up here and spend their $2.37 for lunch and fill up a car with gas and come over from Terrebonne or wherever. And the chiropractors, for whatever reason, opted to drop $100 a piece during legislative session to hire someone to do it for them. And the
person who's doing it is not doing it out of his own personal conviction and time.
What if he's a chiropractor that lives here? I think we're beating the question.
I think you're right. Well, I think that happens to be true. That's why I said that.
I don't think this measure is intended to regulate amateurs. I think it's intended to regulate professionals, and I think professionals are fairly easy to define.
Would you count as public employees then, such as county commissioners, city councilmen? Would you consider them as professionals then?
I have no opinion on that, Senator.
Would the common sense people be considered professionals?
They would, and they would register, I'm certain. Under the way the bill is drafted here, if I were to draft it, I would perhaps draft it differently, but also I would register if this bill became law.
Representative Paula?
I think it's the Common Cause and OPC structure. Community dues paying structure, and the official spokesman of all those organizations should be, but fall in the category, I think, just like the Oregon Environmental Council. Individual members, they get fired up enough about something to come down here, should not my community be included. And I think that's what Rich is saying, that's what Representative Boomhauer said.
I think you didn't hear what the Two and a half years on the bottle bill in the 69 and 71 session, I at no time spoke for any organization. At no time. I spoke only as an individual. I spent my own money, my own gasoline, took my own parking tickets to the police station, and so on.
Did that bill ever pass?
I can't remember.
I'm not sure. Under our present law, would a man who had come down from say Owens Glass and lobbied against that bill, would he have had to register as a lobbyist, wouldn't he? Under our present law?
250 of the team one-day employees to the thing, and I maintain...
No, I meant the manager or something like this that might have been down here two or three times. Wouldn't he have had to register as a lobbyist?
What does it say? Like, 2A, any person agrees to provide his personal services for money or any other consideration. So if somebody's an employee...
Now, Mr. Chairman, let's hear from the professionals and see what they have
all
to
right,
say.
Fine. Now, do we have somebody from the Capital Club that would like to? Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Allen?
Committee, my name is Dick Allen. I am a lobbyist for the Brewers Institute of Oregon. I practice law in Salem. But my capacity here this evening is as a representative of a committee of the Capital Club to share with you some of the things that the Capital Club has done so far in connection with this legislation, and to advise you the present status of our meetings and so forth.
Who's the gentleman on your right?
Mr. Henry Speckman, as you know, is our current president of the Capital Club, and we feel that collectively here we might be able to bring out some of the aspects of this bill, which the lobby, I believe, uniformly agrees that in its present form is unworkable. Now, what we've done so far is this. There has been appointed a three-member committee from the Capital Club. I was one of the members. We've met twice with two members of the legislature, the House. Trying to work out maybe what some of the problems were, we found that as we members of the Capital Club, just the three of us had such difficulty in getting together ourselves to try to get this thing worked out, time-wise and so forth, that last Thursday, that committee was expanded to seven members. This has been so recent that we have not had a meeting yet, but we hope to come here tonight, find out what the proponents felt about it, see what some of the problems are, and that we, as their Capital Club, can address ourselves to see if something reasonable can be worked out and we can live with. Now, most of these problems have been touched upon this evening, and so I'm not going to repeat a lot of that. I will say this, though, that so much of the requirements of this present bill, as the reporting, they're not subject to any clear definition. I think it's significant that nobody has appeared in favor of this bill has been able to say what exactly has to be reported. I certainly can't furnish that, but this is one of the problems maybe that has to be talked about. One of the things that everybody needs to address themselves to. As far as income of a lobbyist is concerned, we have this situation. There are, I believe, three general categories of lobbyists who are what are would be termed professional lobbyists. We have the individuals who come down here that are paid for a legislative session, a particular amount, or paid a certain amount for a bill or defense of a particular bill. We have a number of association representatives, Mr. Speckman is one, people whose full-time job is to represent an association at a salary. They don't get paid a nickel for lobbying as such. Then we have people in the same general category as that who may be officers or employees of a particular industry, a particular group who are just on a salary as an officer of a corporation. They also do not get paid anything as lobbying, but one of their functions in representing the people whom they work for. Then there's probably a third category I would be a member of. I'm a lawyer who is a partner in a law firm. My income comes from my law practice, I don't receive any of my personal income directly from lobbying. However, we charge legal fees to represent a client at the legislature. So when you consider that we have these three general categories plus differences, plus the broader categories within those, we find a real definite problem as to what can be expressed as income, what need not be expressed as income. So far as expenditures are concerned, one of the things that's obviously missing from this bill is the definition of lobbying. What is lobbying and how do you attach an expenditure to it? There's a definition of a lobbyist, but lobbying can mean a lot of things or it might not. I suppose that a lobbyist would spend a great deal of his time merely in reporting to the people he represents, advising them of the status of the legislature, advising them of the bills. It has nothing to do with opposition or action on a particular bill. You have a time-consuming deal. I live in Salem, so does Mr. Speckman. Our living expenses might not be considered a expenditure, somebody else's might. Just point that out to show a very definite problem in trying to relate specifically what needs to be reported and what doesn't, because every one of those involves a judgment decision. What's important about that is that there are criminal sanctions attached to all of this. In addition, there are also civil penalties, a triple damage sort of theory. So when you have a judgment decision or you have to apply to a reporting which is subject to be second-guessed by somebody based upon their own opinion, subject to criminal sanctions, then you don't have a very fair, you don't have a workable piece of legislation. Now, I think that maybe specifically in the bill, for example, I'll just pick out one thing here. On the top of page 5, subsection C, on line 7, there's a reference to it has having to do with the list of expenditures and so forth. On line 7 it says, oppose, I imagine that "an" is supposed to be any candidate for elected public office, which could go down to county officials or anybody like that, would have no relation whatsoever to legislative function. Doesn't seem like it would be a relevant function to have to report on, yet who would know whether he should or not. Over on page 6, I know there's been a lot of, I've talked already this evening about people who are exempt. Representative Paul has talked about subsection 4 there at the top of the page, but going up to subsection 3, where it refers to people who receive no compensation and limit their lobbying to appearances before a committee, conceivably could spend $1,000 in preparing material to present to a committee. So if the thrust of this is to find out how much is spent in the lobbying process or in the legislative process, then you have to include all of these people. If the thrust of it, if the basic premise is to just set aside people who, one reason or another, receive part of their compensation through their efforts down here, then you're not getting a full story of the lobbying effort, and it begins to be an unfair burden on what you might call professional lobbyists. And also, this bill as written seems to put an inordinate burden on the Secretary of State. I think that I'll stop now, unless you have some questions of me, and let Henry maybe bring up a couple of items that he's thought of.
Henry?
Yes. Chairman, one of the problems, as I see it, is the way the bill is written. In my own particular case, my salary goes on year after year, whether the legislature is in session or not. It's not based on the legislative activities. This is just another part of my job is to represent the pharmaceutical industry. A problem that I can see in reporting expenditures, what if, now I live here, moved from Beaverton down to Salem because of the inconvenience of establishing a residence in Salem during the session and also having a home with children back in Beaverton. And I was one of the ones with the foresight thinking that there would be an annual session within a few years, so 10 years ago I moved down here to establish my residence. I still think it's going to come. But anyway, I've got the problem of what do I do if I invite a people to my home for brunch? How do I break it down so I know what I'm spending actually on the people? I don't consider, maybe this is where I'm having my conflict. I don't consider this the part of lobbying. It's getting to know people. I do this with people who were in the legislature who are no longer here, that I've become friends with over the years. If I invite people out to dinner, I'm doing it to get to know them. I'm getting to get better acquainted with them. I can see a lot of problems that if you're out some evening in a large group of people, you sign tabs, you have no idea how much it goes to each one. These things can happen and have happened. I can see where there could be some very difficult problems in the reporting aspect.
Question, Jeff.
Seth, like several of you asked you when you got up here, so I'll ask you. One way to do it is to change the bills as you can, buy as much as you pick up the tab, and let them ideally do it.
Well, that's one way of would eliminate the need, yes.
But they wouldn't have to worry about the
reporting.
Couldn't do it.
Any sort of prohibition there?
Well, trying to search for an alternative here, I think we're going to have two concerns. One alternative clearly is that we seem to perhaps put everybody on even footing, and that is just don't buy as much as you can bring, pick up a tab, and all the things that are so hard to pick out from pulling.
I'm afraid you'd have my Farm Bureau or my Cattlemen's Association all mad when they couldn't have a banquet up here.
Well, they might enjoy it.
Another thing that we don't want to overlook is this. We're not appearing here just to be negative on the concept of the lobbying registration bill. We've pointed out a number of the problems which we intend as a lobby committee to try to address ourselves to. We feel that the proponents of the bill ought to be addressing themselves to the same problem, so that if there eventually is some meeting of the minds, we have a reasonable, workable bill. So, unfortunately, we're not prepared to give solutions to these problems tonight or suggest, but we are in the process of trying to figure something out.
Norman?
What if we amended the bill to say that you couldn't buy as much as it did if anything unless you sold at least 10 or more, and that would make you feel very
good? What was that? We didn't hear what
you're
you said.
You're worried about your little farm group that can't hear you.
Oh, unless there's more than
I didn't hear what you said, so we asked.
But he said that your farm group, that the cattlemen would be unhappy that they couldn't give them a banquet. They could give them a banquet, but it would be
easier to report. I wanted to ask Henry if he was going to have any call girls at that luncheon, but that would make a difference.
In that regard, I kind of wish we had that bill so we would have listed who was there. I was not invited to this, but I got really bored. The question is that all legislators were there. This bill sure would help us out.
Yeah.
Some of us were invited to that little party.
I went home and checked whether I was using my underarm stuff because I'm not going to get invited either.
I think Senator and Representative There are other areas of the building that we have had concerns with. We would agree that we would like to sit down and try to make work with peace. I feel personally that in talking with Dave Frommeyer that he has been very agreeable to sit down and discuss these things, and we would certainly like input with the committee along with him. I think that possibly something then could be worked out.
Henry, is it your opinion that some sort of legislation like this is desirable?
My personal opinion is no, because I haven't seen no reason for it. I've been down here 21 years now. And I think that you're creating, perhaps making it a more difficult thing, and perhaps creating some problems with this type of thing. I think we've had no problems that I know of in 21 years.
Why don't we change the bill around so that we took Rich's definition of lobbyists when he's paid and require registration of them? Then that's what we're doing.
We have that already, okay. First of all.
So we require that, so we put it in statute form so there's nothing rules for the criticism or present concerns coming to the court. Some of it's in statute, some of it's in our kind of house rules. And then, rather than, and that's just registration. So you've got a jersey and a number and identification, so eventually help us find out who does what. And then we go to reporting of what I perceive to be the concern of many people, the dinners, the lunches, whatever gratuity, the lobbyists, whether they're paid or not, share with us. So that we're going to the same thing when we're taking this approach. That is, we register professionals so we know who they are. We're not worried about what you're getting paid, because I don't see those things in the bridge hand in that direction, whether you're motivated because you're going to save some tax money, or you're motivated because you're a chiropractor and your association is covering your expenses. But how about zeroing in on the gratuity, the lunches, either by prohibiting them or by reporting them? Whether you're paid or not, if you buy a legislator lunch, or if this bill goes, a county commissioner, or planning, or whatever.
Well, one of the problems with reporting is, I think, if you could report at the end of the reporting period, 1 month, whatever it is, it's X number of dollars was spent, but when you have to try to break it down to how much you spend on each one, this is where I can see that a problem exists. If we could...
Don't you do that already?
Yes, but I mean, you're talking about $25. Supposing you have five people out. I don't break it down that they're expensive. You had a $5 dinner and somebody else had an $8 dinner. I spent.
But you would probably keep records. Suppose you put down that you
had. Who was there?
Yeah, who was there? Person, yes. Early, yes. Parsons and Ripper, but that's $25. Now that would be
awesome.
That's
awesome.
Or
any of the reporting aspects, I think that the first place is what's the first one to bill is, what are you after? If it's the amount, then I think that the total amount would be enough. But if you're going to try to break it down, how much I'm spending on a particular bill that I happen to be interested in, I can't see how I could possibly do it, because maybe there's eight bills that I'm interested in that are floating around, some in the Senate and some in the House. We're listing bills and how much is spent per bill there, and I'm interested in all of them.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I'd like to go into another area other than this money business. I receive letters from attorneys, groups of, you know, partnerships, and they are opposing, we'll say, a bill, and they give all the reasons for it, and they sign the name Rich Chambers attorney. Now, I have no indication who they're representing, if they represent anybody other than themselves or not, and this is something that kind of bothers me, and I wonder if somebody might comment on that.
I don't think I'm going to receive the letter from the law firm.
was lobbying for somebody else to bring this in.
I have maybe.
Oh, gosh, I've got lots of them.
Whether it's coming from themselves or whether it's coming from a client of theirs.
Another example, that may happen, but I got a letter from a constituent against a particular bill and broke to me as a constituent. And I was curious because it kind of seemed to be running contrary to the other way. And I looked him up to see directly, and he's the manager of a store at which the legislation direct. He didn't mention that in his letter. He was the manager of the store, he was writing me as a citizen. So I think your point's probably well taken, but it's not confined to the legal profession.
But at the same time, I'm talking about a law firm that is receiving a compensation from a client, and they're writing a letter to me, and they're not identifying the client. They're merely lobbying one way or another on the bill.
Mr. Chairman. Dave, can you tell me in just a few simple, non-legalistic terms what you hope to accomplish for the legislation? What is your thrust? What do you want?
Simply disclosure of influences which are by and large now, influences on public decisions which are by and large now hidden. And those influences I would define largely in monetary terms because there are a few better ways or cleaner ways of doing it, even though you're quite right that there are other kinds of influences on legislative decisions that don't involve the expenditure of money. But by and large, it's money input into the political process at the legislative, administrative, decision making level that we're after in terms of disclosure only, not prohibition, just disclosure.
Was contribution and expenditure report turned in monthly or at the end of the session or whatever? Satisfy what you're talking about? Is that what you're really driving at?
Well, I wouldn't like to simplify it, but I would like to think that House Bill 2530 is a contribution and expenditure bill geared for the special circumstances of lobbying practices, and there's really nothing more.
Well, much of what you say is already here in present law, and or under a rule.
I would take issue with that, Senator, if I don't believe that so.
Except for the parts that we're having all the argument about.
Since you are not the first legislative body, you have to argue about those, and there are exceptions to the last.
Because what we're really trying to, what we've been arguing about, what is a lobbyist, you know? And that definitely has been part of it, and what is an expense?
They're quite to the degree, and they're shades of gray, and I think that it's possible to make the line betweener than it is, but I think that there's no way that one can effectively get a handle on this process without attempting to draw some of those lines, some of which, therefore, will appear to be arbitrary.
Would you attempt to write us a definition of what is lobbying?
I could do. Sure. Do you mean in the next 5 minutes? Or?
No. Just write it and mail it to us, and that's with apologies to Mrs. Cohen.
Are there further questions? No. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else now to testify on House Bill 2530? Okay, I will then call this hearing closed, and we have another one that we want to go back to now. And that was the one that Norma was going to explain to us.
Norma, the question came up relative to future bills on the bill you carried on the floor.
Today.
You made a reference to it, and I told them the way that you got here. That part doesn't hold.
second one is a licensed psychologist. That is one of the other bills.
Oh, I thought that was Senate bill. There is a bill for licensed psychologists, 275. I just didn't see the 275 up there at all.
And I called Grandpa, and he just scrolling upstairs. Do I understand the way it was drafted? Yes. The way it is drafted, those bills do not become law. They are not included in this one. That doesn't invalidate the rest of the law.
Right. On page 3 of the drug bill, line 26 on page 3, section 2, says if, and that's really the key to it, if upon the enactment of that, then. So that this is the way legislative council, I went to them with a conflict report and asked them, how do I get what the committee wants to do out, along with what these other two committees want to do with theirs. So the thing to do is put an escape clause in it, and you just say, if. And when these things, if they're passed, then it's amended to read. If they're not passed, then that's just flushed out of the bill.
This is not a common practice. I've never seen that in a bill before.
Maybe it worked out right. Well, my problem is this, that section 1 says if these two bad bills pass, then this is mandatory. This way, I guess is what it says. Section 1 is a different one. It says ORF is amended by two bills that have not in fact amended ORF 44040. I think your remarks are appropriate, friend, to section 2, which says if chapter blank, which is the one Fagan's talking about, then this is correct. But you'll see buried in there are the same changes we've made for 2101 and 275. So the effect is this. Let's say 2101 is killed, and so is 275, but 347 passed. In effect, we have then done a license certified as for psychologists, and because these bills repeat the same changes we made on 2101 and 275, we, even though those two bills have been killed, we've amended this bill to match them, and it doesn't do it.
Right. Well, that was the question I asked the legislative council, and I plead ignorance on it. I was told that I hadn't seen this in another bill myself either, but I went to them and said, okay, here are the conflict reports, and I called the other committees and said, yes, they were confident that their bills were coming out. There were three other bills that were in conflict. We were not treated in this manner because they're not going anywhere. And I turned it over to them. This was the product they returned to me.
So let us set for another week and find out what's happening.
I would recommend
it. I think let's do that. Let's not take any more.
They try very carefully to anticipate what the legislature may do. The problem is trying to anticipate the passage of three bills.
We're not out anything to let it set here for a little bit. It's been passed on one side and we can leave it set right here. And,
break up the camera going. Do I go to another subject?
Yes.
We've heard House Bill 2529, and Chairman Ripper and I have each attended a draft of substantial change assistance to the conflict of interest. And in my view, it's totally unworkable in a substantially amended form. What I'd like to do is maybe we can get some, if I could have permission to say, and have Grant go through and reproduce this.
Fine.
Or correct it, reproduce. So that we could some people kind of share. I've tried to remove what I thought was the most worth of the starting point on a particular bill.
And some of those probably already been identified in the last week.
Yes, I'm sure they have. I talked to Bill Cross about some of the groups that were in the bill. It's considerably weaker results than it is now. My view is it'd be better to be weaker and work than be strong.
Do not work, yeah. Mr. Chairman, relative to this, we've had hearings on public records, conflicts of interest, and lobbying. And now we have a brand new bill from courtesy of Senator Hurd, which is umpty ump pages. How many?
About 83.
I wish you would.
Well, I'm concerned about when we're going to be able to work on these bills.
Let's take these last two we've heard and work on those next week.
Well, why do you think that'd be easier than public records, since we heard
that's
first?
Ungodly.
I don't think that's the stuff is a conflict of interest.
He's got some pretty simple versions.
Yeah. May I explain that for everybody? During the last session, Senator Byers and many other legislators were very concerned about another party involved.
They
eight
or
nine.
That's a conflict of interest.
A resolution was passed directing the Legislative Administration Committee to conduct an investigation. And we conducted our investigation. We had a protocol that did everything and did not involve hiring the case we thought was going to, and then we got into the directed to print some of this stuff by law. So he made a report. The report was printed about the time we went into session. And then we simply turned the report over to legislative council and asked them to write bills. And the bill has come out. Senator Ivers, Representative Ingalls, and I are the sponsors. And it has involved a great deal of work. So I talked to the co-chairman and to the president of the Senate and asked if it could be referred to the committee, since it is a joint committee, and hopefully we can move a little faster. And what I discussed was the possibility of having the attorney vote the bill and having the amendment that
would it do away with certain materials that have to be printed before to the agency and say, you no longer have to print or bin.
Or you don't have to contribute it to the entire legislature and stuff like that. And the attorney has spent weeks on this. And so I thought that maybe if we can get the time, we can have the attorney and the amendment that works to come in and tell us what the deal is.
Well, I agree. We're contributing solid waste problems too. This Friday.
That's a good
night.
A lot of it costs, we're talking about it. Anyway, that's the result of about 18 months of work. Very, very important.
Well, the reason I brought this up is that if the leadership of the House and Senate want to get out of here first week of June, is this still the deadline or the goal?
Somewhere in that area.
I'm concerned about finishing up these three bills plus Fred. And I don't see how we can do it without some additional meetings.
We're
going to have
to do
it.
The Aeronautics Board.
No.
I suggest one of the things that I guess I forgot to say in the house, but one of the things that I think that could assist us is that we could break into subcommittees and make intervening rather than have three more meetings in the committee, divide each one of those bills up to House and Senate members, maybe two House and Senate members, to meet sometime at their convenience with notice. To sit down and see if we can gel the thinking of the group and come back with an amended bill rather than thinking on
that's a good suggestion. That's a good suggestion. I have no idea when the House members can meet unless it's Sunday.
Let's get together.
They don't want to meet on Sunday.
But I do think that this conflict of interest and the lobbying bill are two that we have to get out in some form or another. There's nothing more than because of Watergate and our own credibility. And I would like to see us work on those right away and get them out. And you've got one that you're drawing on now. Would you like somebody to work with you? Who would like to work from the House side?
Well, why don't we take, if you want to have a joint question, I thought maybe you could take, say, the conflict of interest in Fred's bill, and we'll take public records and lobbying.
Oh, goodness.
It's okay. Well, you worked on the conflict of interest, and Fred is the expert on the other bill, so I thought it would be natural for you to take those two.
All right. Fine.
And we could take public records and the lobbying bill.
Fine.
We
Okay, let's do that then. That's what it is. And we'll get together, find out when we can meet, and publish the time.
Okay, when the five of us are here, or while the five of us are here, what do you want to do? When do you want to meet? We have one other one. We've got the aeronautics.
I was kind of waiting. Thought maybe we might wait on that until we see what the other.
I don't think
another
that's why.
Bill somewhere is coming out.
It changes the structure of the board.
The only reason we're letting you get away with it is the hour.
Yeah, well, now, let's try this. Let's try this. Next Monday, let's have the committees meet as usual in different rooms, and we'll work on our bills. You work on yours.
All right.
Been all right?
Okay. Or we might have that hearing on the airplane bill.
That's room 20, John.
Lot
of mail. All kinds
all
of mail on it.
Every flyer in the state.
Yeah, well, we got one about makeup of their board.
What's the bill do, Grant?
It changes the entire board to make it pilot rather than non-pilot. Different people from air carriers and sports flying and different kinds of categories of pilots, and they'll all be the board. And it's one that the recreational and private pilots are really, really seriously concerned about. Which there's been a heavy, heavy mail on. I imagine room 20 would be filled.
They don't feel like they've been well represented on the flying.
It's going to have a very foggy day, though.
Yes.
One minute, Bob, and I've been working on the way to the city. There's a subjugation that formed in the last few months that many of the pilots are reviewing the budget, and they're really up in arms.
No, that's why we've been kind of holding up, because you do have something to do with this and make up down there.
Just think that three-man subcommittee ought to do that, Beauty?
Well, it really ties in very well
I'm
with
sure
the
I'll ask the chairman to show up.
Chairman,
yes.
What I'd like to do is, in the
word
of the subcommittee working on public records and if we can have
no, you've got conflict of interest.
I would suggest, though, that different than what you said, you know, about us meeting next Monday, we have a problem of staff and getting the stuff recorded. Why don't we get this worked out if we can, and then we can bring these back, and we can go over them, and we have them in pretty good shape.
I think all of us know enough about it that we
could work out something.
I don't know when these people can meet. Ways and Means has a meeting every single night this week.
Yeah.
Would require staff that would have had a price tag on it, a couple hundred dollars, and I
for other dollars that we could get anything to raise the means of this trip on that kind of adventure. So we were trying to find an effective type of bill that would still cover these same points and maybe not be quite so extensive. So I'm going to let the attorney know. Lee, would you go ahead and explain earlier there?
Due to the fact that the press is here, I'd like to make a statement so that I'm sure somebody's going to say that I've got some kind of vested interest. I am perfectly willing to make a financial statement. I have made a financial statement in the last campaign at any time. So far, I mean, personally, frankly, all of my assets of any magnitude are in a trust, which was established when I took office. Instructed to turn over all my assets and reinvest them and not to, under specific instructions, not to inform me of what's in that blind trust. So I want to make it clear that I'm here. I think that I am not considering conflict.
At least not that you're aware of.
And I think that's one of the main points is one point that I always have objections to is requiring people to file financial reports. I started to think about this the other day, and you end up with a problem with somebody, and particularly any person that's got substantial assets, and you're just going to forget something. You know what he did? He's objecting to criminal prosecution, embarrassment, and a question of credibility and public credibility, or something that really was nothing more than an oversight. I also frankly feel that a financial statement is an invasion of personal privacy. It has no relationship, the asset has no relationship to the person, the public functioning performing. And if you go to complete financial reports, I think all we're going to do is discourage a lot of very competent, able people from coming into government. Considering the difficulty we have in getting good people with government, I don't think we want to set up those kind of roadblocks. What this proposal would do, and we didn't draft it in an amendment, it would actually be just a substitute provision. It goes into a considerable definition of what a conflict of interest is. And then in section 4, prescribed at any time, well, let me say this. First, this bill only applies, my suggestion here is that it only applies to state government officials who are full-time officials. It would not apply to legislators, because I don't think this type of proposal is practical to the legislature. The legislature would be bogged down filing conflict of interest statements and not getting its business done. I think most of the conflicts that exist in the legislature are well known to the press. Certainly known to the individual, to the membership itself. I think we ought to recognize the legislature is a conflict of interest. That's what it should be. That's my understanding of what democratic government is all about. But it does apply to all full-time state officials, both elected and appointed. And it would require that any time a state official is in a situation where he has to make a decision or a recommendation or he has some part to play and he has a potential conflict of interest, he has to file a statement with the appointing authority. And an elected official is filed with the Secretary of State. And those records, of course, would be public records open to access. To the public. If we fail to do so, it would be a misdemeanor, a crime, Class A misdemeanor. Likewise, we provide that any action could be enjoined under certain circumstances, which is set forth on page 4. In defining a conflict, we try to somewhat narrow it up to dollars, also to take care of the situation. Also take care of the situation, for example, a licensing board member, the individual on the board naturally have a conflict of interest to recognize that that situation does not require a statement where they are merely really passing regulations that affect their entire industry. They, of course, it would be unique to them, and they wouldn't be in any situation where they should file. I'd be glad to answer these questions. This is essentially a very simple approach to this problem, but I think, and it, also, we've limited the state officials because I think what we ought to do is try something like this, see how it works for 2 years, and then maybe possibly apply it statewide to all public employees, local governments, and so forth. But let's give it a, let's go through a model period and find out what the results would be.
We went a little further than you did, Lee. We suggested that, same thing, well, you said government officials. And I think that we went to describe any salaried elective office, which would include city council and county commissioners, this sort of thing, but not all city. But yeah, where they didn't have it, it wouldn't be there. But we were talking about getting the general salaried people who might have the most conflict because these would probably be closer to full time thinking of county commissioners. But this is, like I said,
we have avoided in here the problem of trying to get into the question, you know, where you cut it off. You know, so it would apply to all state officials, any, even a clerk, they're in a situation where they are making a decision and they got a conflict and they report it. Most of the time, a clerk is going to be in that situation. But, for example, certainly every lawyer in my office.
Well, I think this is the decision that the committee is going to make is how far we want to go. I think that's the major one.
That's a function of what we require. The less we require, the more inclined I am to go further. In other words, we require a very serious detailed financial statement to be inclined to try it at one level first and see if it works. But if we can get the thing cleaned up, it's not required to 80,000 reports and this sort of thing, I'd be inclined to at least take it through the legislature.
I would too.
And because the cities can do it anytime they want. You don't need a state law for the city to adopt a conflict of interest test. Home rule county can do it. They don't need us landing on it. So that could be done that way. But if the legislature is going to do it, it's going to apply to the legislature. We've got to do it.
Well, my view of the thing is, one, I don't think anybody can say that Oregon is really a serious problem, either at the local or at the state level. On the question of local government, we talked about the Lincoln County situation. There are conflicts. The public out there knows those conflicts exist. They're quite aware of who these people are.
Well, we might not know in state government who owns the sand and gravel office.
I think because they are more remote. I think there is more reason for requiring the state government for that very reason. What I'm really trying to get at is I think there is a lot of argument for trying it here and see how it operates. And then deciding, maybe a lot of the cities and counties would fall on their own initiative, and decide maybe if there's an okay to run.
Question, what about the, and we've got two different directions going. In yours, you say that you, in each particular case, you file a statement of conflict so that a state agency director forced with a choice over something that he's involved with has to file with the governor or elected official with Secretary of State, and you say that we'd exempt the legislators because on a day when you've got 30 bills on the third reading, you have, you know, possibly 15 from each member on 30 bills times, you know. But the other bill, the amendment that Senator Rivers offered, would make for one filing of financial interest once every 2 years, and that would be it, to not call for the particular, in other words, it just states a summary of the economic interest to be published by the Secretary of State, and that would be a public record, and then he can just go ahead and do his business.
Not statement.
Not the statement. A summary
statement would be private.
Right. A summary of what is interesting.
The Secretary of State would say you have a conflict with education.
Well,
a conflict with
my objection to that is if then you are getting into something that is none of the public's business.
What is it?
If somebody owns an asset that doesn't have any relationship to this public function, why should he be required to disclose the asset?
No, as the amended version that Senator Rivers put before the committee, it would mean that the official would give a statement of economic interest to the Secretary of State, and from that he would summarize, without using any financial value, dollars, shares, or anything else, state categorically potential areas of economic interest and therefore conflict of interest are in mineral exploration, timber, real estate development, period. And then the legislator or state official would go on and do his business. The public would be aware of what his interest is. And in the given case where someone made a suit, that statement could be brought out by an order of a court and say, okay, here's what he filed, and find out what he actually did. And the insurance law.
What do you do with an individual who's got a very diversified stock investment?
We stated that you had to either have 10% control of that, or if you had $25,000 or more invested in that company, you would have, if you didn't have 10%, this would be a large enough interest, thinking that
Senator Cardin, I was on the other day.
This is
one
part of the problem.
One person who owns 100 shares of Portland General Electric might have a definite conflict of interest. Another person would be no conflict at all. No. I think it's, frankly, I think it's much more important that where he has a decision to make that has some real importance that he do reveal that what his conflict is.
Chairman, I'd like to agree with Lee, but I think the thrust for this would be most effective just disclosure. Not necessarily the value, but the interest. Because I don't think that putting the financial amount down really does tell the whole story. The assumption is, of course, the greater the interest, and this is what Lee was saying, the greater the investment, the greater the conflict. That's not necessarily so. There are conflicts other than pecuniary conflicts. And I think disclosure is going to be our goal here, or should be our goal. And the thing I'm concerned about is, as long as at least writing a written statement, perhaps that's easier for a state official to do, but I'd like to see this effectively in the legislature. And conflicts of interest are kind of hard to program on any kind of a day-to-day basis to figure out how many conflicts of interest you can have. An example I gave the committee the other day was I sit on Senator Fabian's Education Committee. We had a fellow come in to talk about an intern, several witnesses, talk about a continuing study or an interim committee on interns. Got into the area of talking about housing interns and giving them a per diem or a stipend. And it occurred to me that Willamette University, which is across the street, would be an excellent place to house the interns next session. Then, of course, I declared to the committee that I do have a conflict. I'm on the Board of Trustees of Willamette University. So I tried to, and then we talked about whether that would be good, and it would be in Willamette's interest because they have empty spaces in the dormitory. But the question then came, how do I comply with the 2529 as written? Do I not share that with the committee, which I think is really an impediment, or do I run down and file my potential area of conflict of interest? I think the real answer is not to require the discussion of potential conflict of interest, it's to disclose to the people and let them draw their conclusions on whether or not it's a conflict of interest. And we'll continue on as we've been doing, and that's sharing our potential areas of conflict. I don't think running down to the Secretary of State and filing a note saying potential conflict of interest for trustees discussed on such and such a date.
Well, I don't think you can go through that many
think of the variety of things you have to. But I do think that the public ought to know if you're in real estate or you're in certain types of, you have certain investments, that you would have conflicts here and that you would post these. Then if you declared in the law that it is for the public's knowledge that you are to announce when there is a conflict, that I do feel that most people would comply with this. It would take care of the situation that you're talking about, that you weren't aware that there was a conflict and you stopped to think about it on the board. And at that particular time, you could make your public declaration that I might have a potential conflict here. But those things that you definitely have financial interest in, and I don't mean that they're understood that you are to make public, you know, right down to the nickel what you have invested in that particular thing, but that if you were in the real estate business, that anything pertaining to real estate, you have a potential conflict with. Yeah.
There's different ways of looking at the same problem, but one of the ways to look at this problem is two aspects of it. One of them is in the area of public information about public officials, and would try to cut off rumors or gossip about what was going on. And that aspect really is a credibility of government aspect. It makes people more trusting of the government. And that's where I perked up at least statement, you know, it's not a damn business. I'm afraid that while I hold a public trust, whether I like it or not, and I usually don't like it, damn near everything I do is public business. And there's nothing I can do about that because I've asked for and received a public trust. Walter Lippmann said publicity is the antiseptic of government. I would also say that it's absolutely the best way to cut off rumors or gossip. Then there's a second side to this, and that has to do with the individual holder of the trust and the decisions he makes about how he'll exercise that office. This idea of saying, well, I've got a conflict of interest and this is what I'm going to do about it, tell the Secretary of State, tell the Senate, tell the committee before I go ahead, ask that I not hold. That's more personal than based on your own ethics and your own judgment about what you should do with it. But the public doesn't have enough credibility, doesn't feel secure enough, the government is relatively clean. And with the absolutely devastating events at the national level, it is very imperative that we try to make Oregon government as open as possible. I think at this time it would be a mistake to pass any bill unless it is a bill which calls for considerable disclosure. Maybe easier for some than for others. We just won't admit that one aspect, the one which says, members of the public, I am your servant. This is your office. I'm holding it right now. I'm an individual too. I've got characteristics. I've got a background. I've got biases. And here's the best way I can lie to lay them out financially. We won't get that kind of trust out of the public unless we do that. As far as the other aspect of it, what you decide to do in your own individual ethics, I don't even know that we need a bill to help with that, but if we do, then that can still be covered. The real problem isn't the individual, then. It isn't in Oregon, anyway, the individual legislator. That's not the real problem. The real problem is one of trust and confidence on the part of the people.
Well, Ed, what are you going to do, though, on your boards and commissions?
He didn't tell the governor, he didn't tell the Secretary of State that he owned over $50,000 worth of stock, which to him he said wasn't very much, in power companies, including Portland General Electric. Portland General Electric would have been interested. Now, that ownership came out because of questions started by George Wingard and followed up by me. If that had come out after PG&E had gotten a siting permit from that association, people would have said whether smoke there's fire, and the government in Oregon isn't as clean as it ought to be.
since it came out ahead of time and was disclosed, the judgment was made. Actually, he withdrew his name. The governor didn't have to. I don't know that it was wise for him to be withdrawn, but there was an absolute difference in the way the governor, the committee, and the individual looked at it when he was asked to make the disclosure of his interest in the power company. So the answer is the boards and commissions unpaid. Are really important. It's really important to know what a conflict of interest situation is. He is under a duty this proposal to disclose that interest. That gives the commission to vote on that they are going to be involved in potential conflict.
Yeah, I don't want to overdo this, but I think that there's a lot of problems in government credibility of trust if we get into the courts. Should he have disclosed it was a conflict of interest? He had litigation over that, and then the idea of having a court case to decide whether you're going to have the Secretary of State tell something secret to the file. God, everybody would be saying whether it's smoke or it's fire. Whether it's smoke or it's fire.
And I mean, let me take you to the other side of it, though, that I think that hurts the credibility of government. Suppose a guy, you ask for a listing of his assets, or a general description of his assets. You take a substantial individual, and he's going to have a hard time listing all those assets, and I bet you he'll forget some. And all of a sudden, then he is subjected to a criminal prosecution. And, an outrage in the public over something that may have been not even noticed. I think you get the same kind of effect. Try to require financial statements.
I don't see.
I have no difficulty. I have no difficulty if he says a financial statement might be given to the bank. The problem is, when you put it into law, then I'm worried about using it to forget something.
Of course, Chairman, 25.9 requires an intentional. Not from a publicity standpoint, but from a criminal prosecution requires, as it's now amended, you may not have seen the amended copy, but it's just now amended requires an intentional violation.
Well, you can go either way. It doesn't bother me. My suggestion here was, I really am more concerned about the actual situation when conflict arises. And I think you do have a problem.
I have somewhat that same feeling, not so much from state government, as I feel that all the complaints that I have been aware of about this in Oregon have normally come from smaller communities, or such as you brought it up here in Lincoln County with the land developers on the planning board, this sort of thing. And in small communities where maybe not so true in the city, but man's natural worth is probably held much dearer than this, where he's more anonymous, such as the city. And it's almost like it's extremely personal. So if you start talking about this to a city councilman and for public disclosure, you're going to lose what I feel are the leadership of your community, which are normally your business people. And you end up with the fellow in the office, the very thing that you don't really want is the less of debt.
Let me ask, I kind of think it's important to have a disclosure of the general category. You were talking about that, Mr. Chairman. Without necessarily the amount involved, I realize that what I'm trying to get at is there is a element of disclosure that San John's spoke of, the Attorney General spoke of. I think categories of interest are extremely more important to people to judge whether it's potential rather than a total dollar amount. I think it's the fact that the smoke fire bit, I think the fact that you own one share of Portland General Electric is important to the public, whether you own 1,000 shares of Portland General
Electric.
In your example, because they won't shred it out. And building 1,000 shares of Portland General Electric is really major ownership in the corporation.
$1,000 to some people could be the most important amount in the world, to someone else, $100,000, or like a donkey.
I was thinking, for instance, when Sam Johnson was talking about, and I don't know how many millions of shares there are in the White House, but let's suppose somebody owns 15,000 shares in the White House. For the average citizen, that sounds like quite an ownership. considered a million, I think, in the corporation. So you go across and I've been talking about it. Is there an element where we can go and disclose the category? What we're really trying to show is potential areas, and not necessarily the dollar amount, whether it's one share or 5,000 shares or 5 million shares. The fact that you hold shares in utilities. The fact that you hold shares in, or interest in shares. Because I think some of the interesting things that when you don't hold shares, perhaps you're a lessor of equipment to the utility company or to a super company or whatever it may be. Now that won't show up in some of the information we have here.
This is what we potentially said here, that you would list all the things that you own. And the Secretary of State would then draw up a list of things we have potential. Maybe you don't need that, only in the backup of what you have. Maybe we don't need this thing to the Secretary of State. Maybe all you have to do. But then there's no way to back up what you say your conflicts are.
Well, it seems to me that, first of all, as far as all the boards and commissions that you belong to, that's not a real problem. Most of us use that in our community material anyway. That's part of our biography. That's not a problem. In my second thing is, the question would be, where you have interest? And I think we can, and I'm still not talking about it, I think we can design a form that the individual candidate or nominee or elected official declares where his interests are.
But you have, can I ask you this, Walter, so in this form, do you own or have any interest in forest products?
Yeah.
That type of thing, I think. You know, if you make them list every single asset or possible financial, it could get very difficult. There are people, I'm sure, who serve on some of these boards and commissions who are probably the silent partners for reasons, business reasons, they don't want to know who's a partner. If you do it in that form, I think
there's two issues that have been mentioned. I'm speaking now kind of as a facilitator rather than an advocate. There's two issues that have been mentioned. One of them is whether we should limit the state government for at least the first two years of the law so it doesn't apply to other governments. That's an issue. We might see how it works, whether it is onerous, and whether they want it to extend it. We have to recognize that we pass a law, there will be a suggestion 2 years now. To extend it, but we have something to go on, see how it's going. That's one issue. What is the limit to state government? And part of that issue is whether we are harder on salaried officials than we are volunteer officials, even though their power is very great. The second issue sounds to me like is the nature of the disclosure, which whether it be dollar detail, exact detail, or whether it will be by special interest areas without dollars. I think we're like two places where we can do some talking. As I said, I'm really not interested in the bill. It doesn't give the public the information, so they'll feel secure about us, but I think that's more important than us. I've seen a couple of conflict situations in this legislative session where there was actually money involved, but it's very slight compared to the worst one I ever saw was that one law partner testified for a client in front of a committee chaired by his partner. Neither of them are around, but that was the worst one I ever saw. They don't normally do that. But one thing I didn't see is Wally's suggestion. You do it those kind of general terms like that. Of course, you're going to probably get affirmative answers from some people in practice. All the time, right? But at least that. Then the press can follow them, sure, in a given situation, you know, where they can follow them.
And it seems to me, and I don't mean to use the building all the time, but we did chat about it, and I think there is an area of agreement. And I think, frankly, that making the forms are going to be particularly important. If we turn them over to the Department of Revenue and they make them, we're all nuts trying to fill them out. The way they fix that homeowner's release and the rest of them, it'll be 18-page small type print. But I think we can figure out a form that should ask, you know, do you, and we have to be very careful picking words, have ownership, interest,
leasing,
either in or out in the following areas, then if we credit a farm, we could particularize and maybe take the timber products into timber sales, into manufacturing, into transportation, and a variety of things, because it just makes a bigger sheet of the farm. So you could really particularize it. Some of us may have
why
checked
all of the
fees
that you want to put in, have that form developed by some commission, or I think you'd have a hard time drafting.
I don't know.
The time you've got.
To me, it would be done by the Ethics Commission.
Have a commission do it. You've got to be clear from one bureaucrat, he's going to take the Safeway out.
I'd go to Stephen Madison.
If we were to limit this to the legislature, which I don't think is a good idea, if we were, we wouldn't have to use Secretary of State. We didn't get to use legislative counsel and have him
record
that.
I think we want to go further than the legislature.
Yeah,
right. I think we want to go. We perhaps should sell this when we're all here. Do we just want to have state government the first time around? And that has to be a decision that we make.
I'd only go for that as a compromise. You've got a bill out. I'm switching from the facilitator over to the advocate. I really think we ought to go for it. But if that was a compromise, it's going to get
well, you can still, we kind of kicked this around. How do you get away from this big board? We could still do the same thing using county clerks as the filing place for local governments.
Well, if we can get the system down so it facilitates the filing of the form is clean, explain what they're supposed to do, how they're supposed to declare, I don't think it becomes that difficult to have it come in.
You use the Secretary of State along with all your others?
Yeah, that's
difficult. In talking to legislator Fiscal on the question of funding, I gave him three or four variables. One, that it would include an ethics division in the Secretary of State's office. Two, that would cover legislators and other elected, state-elected officials and appointed officials, heads of state agencies only. And he came back with a figure of around $70,000 for the buy-in for clerk and secretary and the other equipment plus auditor, and that said you could figure on multiples depending on how far you were to extend it. If you got into the question of having each salaried elected official in Oregon, of which there are X number, you could probably compute the numbers of clerk to an auditor that you would need to keep everybody honest in what they were doing and what they were filing. Set up a state ethics commission, no demand for an estimate, but it would probably be if you were to set up something outside of the present bureaucracy is going to go to the firing.
I can't imagine it cost more than a dollar of a filing if all you did was receive them and keep them as a public record.
Index them and come on.
Yeah. I understand there's more involved than that.
Right.
All you're going to set up this commission for is to draw up the form, right? And presumably they die as they do.
Well, I think
we have a commission itself takes about $50 per member per meeting. That's just about how much exposure. You have to pay by overnight. Depends on where you're going.
Well, my thinking was not just the form. I just wanted to think that it can really be a help. It's not really a patient to do well. It's a constant help.
This was the idea of the ethics division of the Secretary of State's office of auditors to, upon a complaint of anybody else or any individual or any questions, and have an auditor to go ahead and make a ruling on it.
You
use his office.
I thought you were going to go to a disclosure law. Why are you going to have a conflict of interest on that?
Well, the thing is, basically, it's a disclosure law, but in my view, at least, attempts to facilitate questions does this time constitute a conflict of interest, because you have several ways of handling it. You can abstain, refuse to participate, or declare your interest in your conflict. And I realize the financial aspect may kill this alone, but we can't think of it.
My view, and this is the view I took in this, but my view is, as long as the conflict is disclosed, let that be worked out, because each situation can be worked out differently. If you're a
three-man board, okay, they excuse them from voting, but suppose they're locked, and they want the guy to vote. They have that choice. The entrance is out in the open, everybody knows about it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you got my office, I've got a provision in the law that where I have a conflict, I can by law go in and go out and get somebody else to do it, but I don't think you need that kind of overlook if you've got the disclosure. Let me make one other suggestion. Is if you go to a disclosure meeting, for God's sake, get rid of all the conflict provisions. We've got them in the code now. There's a lot of very definite penalties for getting to.
Could you provide us a list of those instead of sort of conflicts? What are you thinking about? I'm not sure.
Mr. Chairman, there are three of us on the Senate.
We've got to go too. Let's tentatively set one for Friday noon if we can. I know that noon's bad, but it's about the only time we can meet.
Yeah.
And if we had not gone so long today, but if we are over early on Friday, as soon as the session's over, we would start to meet. And then we could get in the house. That's all right.
Really.
Okay.
I really
want to keep this heading. In the meantime, everybody started knocking around in their own tents.